Now, 75 years in any stretch of the imagination is an awfully long time, and when you actually look at true literary history, you can only actually go to one clear, unmitigated winner of this whole scenario, and that, of course, is the dandy. And the dandy, as you may well have heard, is going digital. It's going to be a digital dandy. Accordingly, we're absolutely delighted to be able to welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today the former editor of the dandy between 1986 and 2008 and 2006. That's Maurice Heggie. Good morning, Maurice.
Good morning.
And, of course, the man behind the digital transformation itself, David Bain. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So, this is a historic moment in so many ways. I mean, not only do we actually manage to wrap up the paper edition by saying, finally, Paul McCartney, your wish has been granted and you're appearing in the dandy, but we're moving into a whole new 21st century phase of enjoyment for these guys.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very exciting today. It's obviously its last print edition, and that sort of coincides with the launch of new sort of dandy.com. And from next week, the next issue will be available digitally online and via your sort of tablets and smartphones. So very exciting.
I know. It's a whole new world, really. I mean, there's a certain sort of notion. One goes back to the historical times where comics were swapped in the playgrounds of Britain, and the magic of DC Thompson kind of was there for all to hold. In fact, I've often been confused by the fact that sometimes some of the stories in the dandy crossed over to the People's Friend or vice versa, but that's another issue entirely. We won't go there. Maurice, as editor for obviously 20 years over this whole thing, is it with a tinge of sadness that it goes totally digital as opposed to staying in the paper edition?
But I see paper go, yes. I grew up reading the paper and I was editing the paper, so I love the paper edition. But you've got to be realistic. We were not getting into the hands of the kids that the digital reboot is a fantastic thing, because we'll once again be sort of relevant to our target market.
I mean, looking at some of the numbers, nearly 2.5 million copies achieved in April 1950. That's quite a phenomenal penetration.
I mean, that's a fabulous number at that time. Because remember this, I was reading it not long after this, and I think if I remember back, we had. As kids, 1 hour on the radio. It was called Children's Hour, and that was our entertainment, apart from things we did ourselves at the So comics were king then.
Well, it still works again. Now, I seem to remember a character that, I mean, maybe it's just memory playing tricks on me, but it was a kind of serious adventure story all about a young captain who always wore a cap, and he has a whole range of controlled toy soldiers that you actually can control.
You have let me down. You were a Beano reader.
Ah!
and that was General Jumbo.
Ah, yes. Well, there you see. It's Biffo versus obviously Corky the Cat. Clearly, Desperate Dan remains dandy-oriented and will remain so. Any thoughts in terms of, obviously, as Dan heads into the 21st century and goes digital Desperate Dan, in terms of maybe going for a vegetarian pie or sort of other alternative meat packages?
Well, if I remember right, Desperate Dan did try a bean pie, a vegetable pie, but the gave him dreadful flatulence.
You know, there are certain things you just can't go for from that point of view. Otherwise, you bring in, again, my own personal favourites have to be the numbskulls, because there are times when I honestly feel as though I'm being programmed by numbskulls in one's own sort of work here. Certainly every time I speak to the students at the University of Lincoln. But that's a whole routine. Who is your own personal favourite?
Well, my own favourite is, because I've lived with him so long, is Desperate Dan. Desperate Dan and his wonderful world that's a sort of Cactusville, Texas, but is most obviously the UK, and just the whole larger than life thing about Dan. I love him.
He's in many ways our kind of British superhero. I mean, I know Banana Man's obviously up there in its own way, but ultimately, if you want a Western character, then Desperate Dan is way up there from that point of view. Keyhole Kate, of course, will be there from that perspective line of things. And interestingly enough, I mean, we'll come to David for this particular one. Retroactive, a superhero team first for DC Thompson.
It's not a first, actually. We were back in the sort of 30s and 40s. We had some British comic superheroes. One of the first British superheroes, and I think they ran through the sort of 50s, 60s, 70s, so they've been rebooted and sort of brought up to date, and so the sort of children and grandchildren of the original sort of Captain Hornet and you know, Warlord, etc. So they've kind of been rebooted for the for today's kids.
And I'm just sort of wondering, obviously, given that D.C. Thompson based in Dundee, obviously without getting political about the whole thing, but should Scotland gain independence in a few years' time, will that mean that you'll actually sort of carve off a whole new creation? I mean, how will the British youth actually benefit from the characters in the Dandy?
Well, at the all, you know, I think that the our artists, I don't think we have, well, we have one Scottish artist, but the apart from the editorial offices, this is very much a UK enterprise. That the our news stories, like Desperate Dan, the revamp of Dan, he is done by a Lincolnshire man who now living in Canada, and yeah, we're pretty international.
One of the things I do like about this is it's clearly a partnership. You've got, obviously, Dubit in terms of Dandy Digital Development Partners. We love our alliteration today. I see where we're going here. And, of course, Gorilla Tea, which sounds as though it could well be a character in the Dandy in all sorts of ways, really. But, yeah, a different line on that setup. Dandy.com is obviously the place to go to. But I also noticed that, in little nods to those of us who remember Tamagotchis, we've actually got Dandy Dollop, a digital pet that you can feed, dance and play with.
Yeah, he's sort of hidden on the site. You have to go kind of looking for him a bit, so little hidden Easter egg. So he's yeah, he's quite good fun.
It's amazing. And David, I've got to ask you the question again, similar to Morris. Who's your favourite character? Is there one sort of particular area that you think, oh yes, let's go with that? I mean, Corky seems to be sort of put to one side these days, really. I mean, he was a Dandy character, surely, Corky.
Yeah,
the cat.
There's lots more. We've got about 15 or 16 characters being written and redrawn at the moment. So Corky is definitely making an appearance in a few weeks. My personal favourite as a kid was the Numbskulls, and I sort of love to see sort of Jamie Smart's artwork now with the new Numbskulls. It sort of adds another dimension to it. It's really, really nice.
And in many ways, you can almost go postmodern, post-postmodern by actually having the Numbskulls designing the computers, putting the computers in to design them. Oh, I won't even go there. It's amazing. Obviously, we heard recently that Star Wars has been taken over by Disney. I mean, I know that Dandy.com is going to be a sensational success. What would you do if Disney or another sort of international company came calling and said, actually, we'd like to actually make movie versions of these characters?
I would love that. That would be. I think we've got characters that like the Numbskulls, like Banana Man, that would. I mean, to do a sort of long feature film and story
exactly.
Would be fabulous.
We'll put the word out there. I think we'll start now the campaign to actually get not only the Dandy going digital, but it's still there. And finally, again, Paul McCartney, presumably he's quite Sir Paul McCartney, happy to have finally achieved his ambition of appearing in the last ever printed Dandy.
Well, we left it late. But yeah, he was delighted to eventually make it into the Dandy.
And a strange sort of symmetry insofar as obviously Ringo Starr, no room for Thomas the Tank Engine, but Paul McCartney gets in there. Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute delight to share some thoughts with you, good self, about the Dandy going digital. A reminder, of course, it's all available from, of course, www.dandy.com. I think all the magic starts there. You've got downloadable games, a whole heap of other scenarios. I'll certainly be going on there pretty darn soon, actually. 75 years of comic history, getting a brilliant digital reboot. First of all, Morris, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the show today?
It's been super. Thank you very much indeed.
Excellent. And David, same question to yourself. Has it been good for you?
It's been wonderful.
So the next question to both of you is, can we look forward to hopefully in a year or so's time, maybe even less actually, inviting you back to the show and actually talking about how Digital Dandy is carving whole new airwaves and enjoyment for youngsters of all ages across the globe today?
Yeah, absolutely.
Morris Heggie and David Bain, many thanks indeed. We'll see you again very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
it's marvellous stuff. Of course, the one character who I believe should really have his own comic strip just for himself in his own superheroic way has to be...
the finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Quite right too. You know, Desperate Dan meets William Sitwell. It's going to happen, hasn't it, William?
You know, I loved the Numbskulls. They were my favourite as well. I just was so... It was just great. It really got the imagination going about these little people, you know, living in someone's brain. And,
yeah.
I still think it's true, actually.
Well, there we are. It is, actually. It's what programmes us in every sense of the word. Not one, but two newbies in the studio today. Katie Grimerson sends her best, but she's headed off into the library, in fact. Ed Wellman has headed off into law, which leaves us, of course, with Grace Parkin and Stephanie Cox, who have just been perusing the fabulous world of Lincolnshire, the Christmas county. Splendid stuff. Pigs in blankets, turkeys. You've outdone yourself, sir.
Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And all set and ready for this week's Lincoln Christmas Market, which, of course, fires off later on today. I mean, what's not to love?
I actually thought that it would be interesting to look at which British county you could generally say produces not just all the essential ingredients for the Christmas lunch, but also does it the best. Oh. And so we sent out our little numbskulls up and down the country, and they came back reporting that Lincolnshire is the Christmas county in that the best sort of pasture for turkeys in terms of, you know, rolling grassland and producing nice slow-growing birds, which obviously, you know, and the happier birds and happy birds, tastier birds. Mm-hmm. And you've got good flat countryside, which sometimes makes people, I don't know, some people find it suicidal, but farmers like it because it means they can farm efficiently. So you know, good goes, and the soil is great. Carrots, as well as the fact that the climate's good because you have fairly mild summers, but slightly mild as well because of the sea nearby. So you know, you've got it all.
All we need is a bit of wild boar. You know, some wild boar that can actually come over to be imported in Gaffa.
Don't talk to me about wild boar.
Does the Prague experience still hurt, William?
Yeah, it does actually.
Never mind.
But it was just cold, you know, sitting in that hide for 3 hours. But I mean, actually, I quite like the idea of enforced meditation. It's quite good to sometimes be sat next to a hairy Czech. Yeah. You can't speak English.
Bouncing about life. Yeah, exactly. Very good. You know, that's, let's face it, that's why they became the Czech Republic as opposed to Czechoslovakia. You know, they wanted to obviously have their own hides that they could sort of, you know, torment British culinary experts with.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mr. Vaclav Havel, if you're listening up there in the great beyond, see your legacy. Stephanie, you were delighted when you saw our food. I can talk about that as a Derbyshire lass. So over to you then, before you get a little shout out for your mum, I believe, who's listening online.
Apparently so. I'll have to check in with her later and find out what she heard. Talking about when you were trying to find the best county in terms of the soil, the climate, what's best for the turkeys, how long did that process take? So I imagine you had a lot of counties to cover to find the best one.
It was about 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
There you go. Bish, bash, bosh, no messing about there.
Exactly.
You know?
Actually, it was less than that. I would say about 10 seconds. We thought, Lincolnshire. Yeah. I think it went like that. You know, the numbskulls in my brain were working overtime at that point. And it was just so obvious. And also, because I talk on this show now and again, if not too regularly for your listener.
It's a weekly feature.
You know, I've been brainwashed into believing that Lincolnshire is a great county for all sorts of reasons. And so it is for farming.
It's been subtly... It's actually, when William's played back his podcasts, he played them in reverse, and it says, William Sitwell is the best, Lincoln is good. William Sitwell is the best, Lincoln is good. So I have to admit it, Ofcom will be listening quite clearly. Grace.
Can you tell us a bit about Brussels sprouts? Because everyone seems to hate them.
Always need to love them.
Do you like them? I don't know anyone that likes them.
Flatulence bombs.
Yeah, I mean, I've often sort of thought that they're the thing that should be put into room 101 and discarded. Yeah. But if you cook them properly and if you sort of boil them properly, and then I think the treat is to slightly, the thing is to cheat at the end by frying them in a bit of butter just to give them a bit of sweetness. You know, but also not to overcook them. So they're slightly, I wouldn't say al dente, but they're not just like mini cabbages.
Yeah.
Which, as regular listeners might know, I always believe that cabbage is the devil's vegetable. So the Brussels sprout is the devil's first cousin. But if they're cooked well, but the other thing is to be honest, I only really have them once a year, and you can drown them in bread sauce and gravy and cranberry and everything else. So. They add a bit of colour to the plate, don't they? So maybe we should give them another chance.
Well, maybe.
Oh, it could be a campaign. I mean, we've had several campaigns this year, as William will allude to. One of which was obviously banning dinner parties, which I think, you know, it's got a success.
That's succeeded.
Fantastic. Liz Brewer, I was going to float this by her last night, but she was concerned about forks, and in particular actually now setting up a special place in Moscow to actually deal with the Russians who wish to actually experience English etiquette. Apparently we heard from our German correspondent that when she came over to Britain for the first time, this is Nikki Wells, dealing with forks and the way in which the British actually actually use the forks like shovels, she said, suggested she'd actually entered a barbaric place, you know, whereas obviously the Germans, they use the fork, you know, as a kind of, you know, spearing device, etc. I mean, do you have any thoughts? I mean, you know, we talked about obviously the origins of the fork, William, but I mean, they are just used as shovels, surely.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of the fork. Yeah. My great-grandfather wrote a history of the fork.
Exactly.
As you know, I've covered it in detail in my book.
Precisely.
Thomas Coriat is the great fork hero of fork history.
Exactly.
In that he discovered it in Italy in the turn of the sort of 17th century. And where we would be without our forks, we'd just have our hands, wouldn't we?
Precisely.
It would be even grubbier.
Exactly. And what other show could actually take you from Dougie Bunn, the show Jumping Rabbit, to Los Angeles, journalists up in Newcastle, via the Dandy online to Forks and William Sitwell and Lincolnshire's County? Yeah. Still to come, we're going to Staffordshire to actually find out about what Sarah Gayton has been up to recently in London and the legacy impact and all sorts of other bits and pieces. But Stephanie, as we pave the way for actually in next week, a fortnight away from the grand 25-hour extravaganza, which we haven't actually booked William for, but hopefully will during the course of the end of the Mayan calendar show. Would you like to throw those last two questions to William Sitwell, please? I know it's your first show, and I know you might sort of think, has he had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat, and is he coming back again? Probably. Throw them, see how it actually goes, see what the response is.
Well, to repeat what Alex just said, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us?
It's been reasonable, it's been telephonic, and there's been some chat, so I can't deny any of those three things.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
Number two. Can't remember. Short-term memory, first thing to obviously go on that particular basis. Is he going to come back again?
Would you come back again and talk to us?
Well, we could try next Thursday. Who knows? I'll need to recover because I've got a... I've organised a massive dinner for some of London's top foodies in Aldo Zilli's new restaurant. So
wow!
Do you feel is the pressure on then as editor of Waitrose Food when that sort of happens? Is it a case of no, it's all right, I know my team, they're going to be fine, or do you think are they going to get bitchy? I mean, that's what I'm thinking about. Do they get
massively so? Yeah. Everyone's backstabbing each other. Much more entertaining.
Yeah, with the forks, of course, provided on request.
And then we should talk. Last night was the launch of Flavour First, which is our new campaign to put flavour first in food. So we should talk about that next week as well, which is being spearheaded by Tom Parker Bowles. So we can chat about that next week.
And the brilliant thing about that, of course, is it's flavour, F-L-A-V-O-U-R, as opposed to flavour, man. That's what we need, a bit more flavour. Flavour. It's marvellous. There we are. See, the William Sitwell rap tune will probably be in the shops by one Christmas. Maybe not this year, because, you know, but we'll get there in the end. William Sitwell. Exactly. He will return. Yes, Rocket Gorillaz. Jamie Hewlett, of course, behind that, together with Damon Albarn, he thinks. Anyway, life continues, and if I want to actually go down the line of Oatie biscuits and the sensational tastes of the moorland, and indeed almost close to Derbyshire, are we not really in this particular instance? Because obviously Staffordshire, Derbyshire, not that far away, are they?
I live in a little place called Hatton, which is actually closer to Staffordshire than it is Derbyshire.
So in which case, destiny and the universe has brought us to the point where we can actually say, assuming she's actually returned from her powdering her nose, which... I know. Sarah Gayton, welcome back aboard the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Good morning, Lincolnshire!
Yes, she's on a mobile production, but still working through, the energy is there. That's the important thing. So, Sarah, sadly, neither myself nor indeed any of the usual Midweek Drivettes were able to actually make our way down to London to provide you with some additional support and obviously do some fine interviews as well on Tuesday when you were actually at this Olympic Legacy podium event. But you managed to get there, which is fantastic. So how did it go? What sort of things can we look forward to in 2013 that maybe our two newbies, Grace Parkin, Level 1 journalism student, and Stephanie Cox, Level 2 journalist an English student, might just sort of say, yeah, we'll go for that. That'd be good. Yeah, add to our portfolio.
Alex is absolutely stunning. There was lots of people there, and the guest speakers were absolutely amazing. And what they talked about was all the big events going to occur in the next few years in Britain. And next year is the Rugby World Cup. And the last gentleman I spoke to, I can't remember his name, but I've got his business card.
It's actually 2015, Sarah. That's not next year. Next year is 2013.
No, there's something year. There's a massive rugby event next year, 2013.
Fair enough. Okay, then, yes, go with that.
Maybe I should have gone to Specsavers. I don't know, but
happens, okay?
There's definitely something happening next year at 21 venues around Britain. And I spoke to the gentleman about the Porridge Club, about the kids having the porridge, the oats for breakfast and linking it with sports and athletes. And this gentleman was so inspired. He gave me the press gentleman's name, and he definitely wants to learn more. So that was absolutely outstanding. For 2014 to 2018, it's going to be an absolutely amazing project about the First World War. And there's an Italian lady there, Agina, and she's looking to capture all the stories that people know about everybody that was involved in the First World War. Absolutely inspiring concept, just amazing. And then a Brazilian lady, oh, she was brilliant, talking about Rio, talking about the volunteering, talking about all the challenges they've got, how the students are going to be involved. And you could just tell she was excited by this Olympic virus, she called it. And her inspiration inspired us. And we were just like, saying, come on, let's go, let's get to Rio in 2016. So that was brilliant.
We've just had our wonderful numbskull scenarios on the case, and indeed the Rugby League World Cup is next year. That's the Rugby League World Cup.
You haven't got your Lincolnshire, I tell you.
No, we like to ensure that everything is great. So I think obviously 2015 is the Rugby Union World Cup. Two different schools of thought, often confused, as I just demonstrated. And as you rightly say, we do start the continuing build-up to the commemoration of the centenary of the declaration of World War One, which is 2014, of course, taking part 100 years after the 1914 assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. There we are.
Definitely. It's absolutely... It was just inspiring. So they're looking at the big events and how they can engage with students, with volunteers, with older people, everybody, to be honest. And it was just nice to see. So, you know, the rugby thing next year, what they were looking at is just not seeing this as a sport, but seeing how they can engage with school children, how they can engage with the public, and absolutely inspire them to enjoy the sport. But there's so much more about it. So I was inspired by them, like, inspiring us. And there was another event as well that was coming up, that it's the Winter Olympics in 2016, that the Russian lady, she was just totally full of life, totally inspiring, and saying that Russian didn't really have a concept of volunteering, so they've had to go out and motivate all these Russian people to volunteer, and now they're inundated with the people wanting to volunteer, but their volunteers were a lot younger than ours, and to be honest, I took Admiral down with me, the lady that has done a lot of work promoting, you know, trying to say Bleak Roundabout. But she also won a Diamond Award from the Queen for her 28 years volunteering on Meals on Wheels. And I think, again, this older generation of volunteers need to come and talk to the younger generation of volunteers to get that experience and inspiration from them.
Well done, Avril. Let's open things up a little bit more. Grace, are you inspired? Do you sort of think, I feel our post-Olympic routine, I want to get involved with this, I want to do reporting and such like. What do you feel?
I think volunteering is really important for people to do, so it's really inspiring that you've went somewhere and you've heard all these stories.
There we are. Grace Parkin is inspired.
I'm inspired,
so to speak. Stephanie?
Sports I struggle with. I'm not the sporting type, but your World War One project that you were talking about, that's definitely something I'm interested in, and I think we do need to learn from the past and keep all those memories alive so that the younger generations can learn what happened.
And speaking as someone who indeed went online and Googled Ms. Gayton, and I hope you felt it, Sarah, it certainly sort of moved in all sorts of ways when you are Googled by Stephanie Cox. What other sort of questions or queries might you have for Sarah that you... I mean, you could always ask about her stand-up comedian training, but that's another line entirely. Carry on.
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but I'm definitely interested in these oaty biscuits. Mm. What is the secret to these oaty biscuits that are so delicious?
Well, you know what? I couldn't believe it, because when we went in the room in Westminster University, and I did see it used to be a polytechnic, and I love those old polytechnics, so the salt of the earth. We met the Brazilian contingency from Rio, and I said to them, I said, oh, hello, I met you at Podium in May. And they said, oh, you're the 80 biscuit girl. I absolutely love you. And so I gave them some of the mince pies this time to give them a Christmas treat. So, it's just the 80s. You don't put much in them, but it's put a lot of passion and love and treat them kind of doing wonders to your taste buds.
So take care of your oaty biscuits, because they're for life, not just for Christmas. Just a thought of that. Still waiting for our share to come back over to Lincoln, but I'm sure they will arrive. We'll hustle back. Anything else you want to throw in, Stephanie? Nope. So let's move on to, where are you at present, Sarah? Where exactly in the world do we find
I'm
you?
Actually, it's just took me an hour and a quarter to get from my bakery to Brown and Greens. And Brown and Greens is an award-winning farm shop at Trentham Gardens. Absolutely beautiful inside, all local food. And I'm sitting here now next to a big lost bin man car that's just pulled up. And I'm sitting here. I'm also filming so we can get this on record for record type thing. Mm. And I'm just waiting to take my 80 biscuits into the shop, so I've told her that to wait a few minutes.
Yes, exactly. You've got immediate commitments to actually get sorted through, which is vital to the whole process. And in terms of your workers, because you made the decision a few weeks ago to actually, I think it's for a charity, you're learning and you're doing a kind of crash course in terms of how to be a stand-up comedian. How is that going?
Alex, we've done it. It's online. Go a leak, 1207 YouTube, and put in It's Me, well, I think it's It's Me, Sarah Standing Up for Comedy, or for Assist. I'll send you the link. But we did it, Alex, and you know what? When I went in, I thought there was going to be 30, 40 people there because we couldn't sell many tickets. Well, the people didn't stop coming.
No.
It was full.
No.
There were people sitting on the back, and to be honest, I tried to get out of
Hilarious.
The place. I couldn't get out. The doctors all in, and it was so funny. But you know Avril? She did it as well. 65, first time ever doing a comedian act. And she absolutely stormed it. And we didn't raise much money, to be honest, because personal fundraiser, I think we only raised about £100. But overall, they raised about £4,000 from the night because so many people turned up. So.
Fantastic. So what was your best joke then, Sarah? I know I should never ask a comedian that, but what was the best line? What was the one line? Is it repeatable?
I'll do the clean ones. What's Cameron's favourite film?
I don't know. What is Cameron's favourite film?
He said with scissor hands, his heart and his head's going one way, but his hands won't stop cutting.
Yes. Edward Scissorhands, his heart goes one way and his hands don't stop cutting.
Yeah.
It's channeling Johnny Depp. Normally we wouldn't have to. And I think the telephone line didn't exactly help in the delivery, it has to be said. That's okay.
I had to tell everybody when to laugh. If you watch my stuff on YouTube, you'll understand. But it's all linked up to what happened at our roundabout. So it was quite well. If you listen to it all, it'll fit in.
So go to YouTube. Do we type in Sarah Gayton on YouTube or is it just.
Just put in Leek, L-E-E-K.
Yep.
1207.
Yes.
And then put It's Me.
Oh, very good. Right.
And Standing Up for Assist.
There we
are.
I'm
sure that's what it is.
I'm sure if we go to Leek 1207, we'll track that one down. It's amazing. We'll let you deliver your Oaty biscuits now, because that's the only way forward as far as life is actually concerned. We'll be wrapping up in a few moments, but let's see if, Grace, you can remember those last two questions you need to throw at Sarah Gayton at this particular time when we're so saying au revoir, Sarah, you know, fare thee well, and so on.
Did you enjoy our chat today?
Absolutely inspired, and I'm going to send you all the links to the World War One lady for you too, so you can all contact with her.
Oh, lovely, thank you. And are we going to be speaking to you again?
Hey, you might be seeing me just before Christmas.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's worth staying in Lincoln for, isn't it, Grace?
Well, there you go. Oaty biscuits.
Oaty biscuits, and I don't know how you can head back to Staffordshire on Derbyshire. Nice to see you. Very close to Staffordshire. Two Door Cinema Club.
Ocean blue, what have I done to you? Cut so deep, yet growing.